All right, here we go on a Sunday morning in March in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live in the Fox Sports RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank Studio every Sunday morning at 8 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. The We also include social media director Spencer the Wiz Ostrowski.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
And along with producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who aside from producing and being a part of many shows here at Lotus Broadcasting, Mags also serves as the locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. Follow the show on Instagram and X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. To get information or to get your questions answered regarding anything mortgage or real estate related, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today.
It wasn't every night where, you know, we're so spoiled to play here, but it was nice to come home after the last few nights and after losing against Vancouver and then, you know, obviously being on the road there for a while. So it's been good to be home, and we really enjoy playing in front of our fans, and they brought the energy tonight, and it was good to get a win for them.
No, for sure. I mean, I think just being on another team for the last 6 years, you know, Vegas has always been one of the best teams in the league, and obviously winning last year, it speaks a lot about the character in the room and the way they want to play the game here, and it's all about winning, and it's a great culture, and excited to be part of it.
Enjoy it tonight. Get your rest, eat well, get your treatment tomorrow for the day off, but the 2 days of prep for Reno have got to be the same as the 2 days of prep have been for every game that we played, and the guys are playing for something. You know, we're going to our arch rival and up on their senior night, still with a lot to play for. And you guys know that. They've deserved it. They earned it. So they should be proud of that. But Thursday and Friday, again, it's going to be the same type of intent to get ready for a really good Reno team.
Of course, Jack Eichel started that out, and you also heard from the newest Golden Knight, Noah Hanifin, along with Kevin Kruger, who will be joining Out of Line the second half of the show. So stick around for that, as they took one on the chin from Reno, lost in double digits last night, and ended as the fourth seed in the Mountain West Conference this season, heading into the tournament. We'll talk about that in a little while. Right now, we are going to get right into Nightcap.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, you know what? I thought Vancouver played a little bit like us last year. They were resilient on the puck. They were good. Did not give us a lot of scoring chances, and but the outcome was not what we're looking for, and I think we took a page of their book. They're doing well this year, right? So I think tonight we played the right way. We were hard on puck, and all four lines and LB were going. So it was definitely great to see.
Yeah, it was an exciting game, obviously, and I thought from the beginning of the game we played with a lot of emotion, and you know, that was a huge 2 points for us, and dealing with some adversity down the stretch, I thought we did a great job handling it. So it was a lot of fun, just a great atmosphere in the arena, and just super excited to be here and get a win tonight.
result, I think, takes precedent right now when you have one in a while, right? We always talk about build our game. We want to build our game so we're good now, this time of year, March, April, May. But sometimes you need a win. There's times you need a win. We haven't had very many of them. And the way the game went tonight, you feel like you're in control. Looks like you're comfortable, and all of a sudden, it's not, right? It's going the other way, and you can have doubts come into your head. Listen, there's good teams in this league. It's not easy to win. We didn't make it easier on ourselves tonight, but at the end, the resiliency we showed is going to be good for the group in the long run. So yes, I think the win was as important as anything. As a coach, I liked the way we won. I thought, like I said, forecheck was good. We were getting inside for chances. We were creating offense by going to the net. Pretty good discipline for the most part. A couple of hooking calls there, but so that part was important when you piece it all together. And I'm sure when I watch it, I'll think the same way. Listen, we did so many things well and then end up getting the win because of that. But to answer your question, yes, the win. Did we want to get outshot like 50-10 and win? Of course not, right? Because, you know, you're fooling yourself that way. But playing the right way and getting the win and playing through a little adversity, you know, you're checking a lot of boxes that we haven't checked in a while.
I would say they definitely are checking some boxes last night. Of course, a win over the Detroit Red Wings, a game that kind of seesawed back and forth, although the Vegas Golden Knights dominated when you look at shots on goal for much of the game. They were out shooting the Red Wings 2-1, and in the long run, they ended up winning the game. Aiden Hill made some really good saves in the game, but like he's been doing for the past couple of weeks, he also let in some very soft goals, something that is going to have to change if this team is going to make another run at the Stanley Cup. That just no question about it. It looked good last night, but again, a couple of soft goals were let in. And, you know, the one thing we were getting to see now is, you know, the trading deadline came and went, but once again, Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee were hard at work. Anthony Mantha, I think, a big pickup for them. We saw the dividends. Noah Hanifin, I believe he had a point or two last night. And, of course, you know, Tomas Hertl, who they just picked up from San Jose. You're talking about a guy who's been an all-star a number of times and plays this game at the highest level. I think all three of those guys will pay dividends as they go forward. But I still think there's a glaring issue, and you know, nobody seems to want to talk about it. And I understand why people don't want to talk about it. I mean, you're talking about a goaltender that took him to the Stanley Cup final last year, and this guy won it for them. I mean, when I say won it for him, they won it cumulatively as a team. But Aiden Hill played lights out. When he came back from injury, once he came back in the postseason from injury, he never missed a game again. And literally, I mean, there were times he carried this team on his back, making stellar save after stellar save. And everyone thought, hey, man, maybe this guy just was a late bloomer. You know, he'd been known for being a late bloomer in his early career, you know, before his professional career. He'd always been known as a guy that kind of just took his time and then all of a sudden became really good. So I thought maybe that happened to him last year. Obviously, McCrimmon thought that as well, as they signed him to a big contract. And we thought, man, you've got him. You're going to have, you know, now you've got a healthy Logan Thompson, and this team is going to be a team to be reckoned with two goaltenders, your last line of defense. But unfortunately, it hasn't worked out that way. I mean, obviously, based on the last couple of games, Bruce Cassidy is stating to us, without saying it, that Aiden Hill is the number one goaltender and Logan Thompson is number two. I think we'll probably see Logan Thompson in goal in the next game, but I'm not 100% sure. And Bruce Cassidy keeps that close to the chest, and he always says his goaltenders will know first who's going to be playing before he talks about it to anybody else. I love the way the guy coaches. I like what he does. I've never been happier with a coach, a hockey coach, I should say, in press conferences that I am with Bruce Cassidy. I was a big Gerard Gallant fan. Pete DeBoer, very dry, but Bruce Cassidy is a guy that brings it every single time. You can see when he's frustrated, but he shows up, he answers the questions, and very succinctly, and I think we all appreciate that. But that aside, this team is going to have to, the last line of defense is going to have to be good. We saw Zach Whitecloud go down yesterday. We don't know what happened. It definitely, they will list it as a lower body injury. It's something to do with a leg, whether it's a knee, an ankle, I don't know. But all I know is he put no weight on it when they took him off the ice. And, you know, and so, you know, a guy like Noah Hanifin.
You know, Whitecloud returned to the bench.
He did return to the bench?
Yeah, you believe that?
No, I didn't see that. Yeah, did he play?
No, I don't think he did.
I never saw him take another shift, Chris, but it looked bad when he went off. It also looked like Nicholas Waugh got the brunt of that too, and he ended up not even missing a shift, just got some help from the trainer on the bench. You know, their defense is going to be okay. I really do. I think Hanifin is a monster pickup for him. You can see all the guys like him, and he's already clicking and gelling with this team. Mantha, I saw make a small error yesterday, but I still think he'll be okay, and I like him. And, of course, Tomas Hertl, if he gets healthy and gets in this lineup with this team, that is a guy that brings a whirlwind of experience, a seasoned veteran that's going to help them out a lot. But, Chris, I'm going to reiterate over and over again, I am worried about the Netminders. And, again, I have seen Logan Thompson and Aiden Hill make stellar saves, make classic, great NHL saves, but I've also seen too many soft goals. And I don't care if you make six unbelievable saves. You let a soft goal go in, a wrist shot from just outside the circle, and nobody impeding your vision go in under your glove. That is completely unacceptable. You can't do that. It's just that simple. You can't have brain farts in the net. And that it looked like he was looking right at him, and it went under his glove. And then the one that went between his legs, barely squirted between his legs, those kind of goals have to be stopped. And if they're not, this team is not going to make any kind of a run in the postseason.
Well, ultimately, it depends how well the team in front of these guys is playing. And I think, look, you have gone through one game this season, I think, where you've had your full complement of 20 skaters, 19 skaters. What is it? 18 skaters.
18
I'm sorry.
Skaters. Yeah.
So one game this year where you've had your A team out there. I do think that once Alec Martinez is recovered, he's going to go back in the lineup. Who's going to come out? I don't know. Maybe Zach Whitecloud. I don't know him. Or maybe Nick Hague. I mean, I can't imagine you're going to take Nick Hague out of the lineup.
And Hanifin is going to play from this point forward.
And it's not going to be McNabb, Theodore, or Pietrangelo. No. So it's one of it's very likely Zach Whitecloud. Assuming he doesn't wake up today and feel like his leg is dead. Who knows? Maybe he'll be injured. I don't know. But look, I think these guys, they'll get their game right. Look, what matters is finding your game. They're going to make the playoffs. And I've been told the likely return for Tomas Hertl is April 16th, which is like, I think, the last game of the season, last regular season game of the season. Hoping it's sooner, but
could get him and Stone back at the same time. How good would that be right at the right time?
Like, we were talking about it last night, and it's like you look at their lineup, and the first thought is William Carrier will come back, and Brandon Brisson will come out of the lineup, and then you have your fourth line of Nick Waugh, William Carrier, Keegan Kolesar. That's set. Then you look at, well, what happens when Tomas Hertl comes back or comes in? Probably looking at either Paul Cotter or Pavel Dorofeyev.
Paul Cotter, as much as we like him, Chris, I think he's the odd man out. Pavel Dorofeyev just finds a way to put the puck in the net.
Well, yeah,
first
game in over a month last night, he goes out and he scores in the first couple minutes of the game. And, you know, I asked, because I'm a big Pavel Dorofeyev fan, have been since his days in Henderson, and I asked both Jack Eichel and Jonathan Marchessault, and they both were like, yeah, he can score goals. And Jack was really adamant about what a big boost it was to get him back. Like, I think fans may not understand how good of a player and what Pavel Dorofeyev brings to this team, but Jack Eichel understood when I asked him.
And the thing is, Chris, again, he's 23 years old. This kid is, he's not even in his prime yet.
Yeah.
And we can see the upside, how good he is. And another guy to me that cemented himself in this lineup is Michael Amadio.
Yeah.
Michael
Amadio is not coming out.
Coming out anymore. So I think the odd man out, unfortunately, Paul Cotter is a very gritty player. He is a guy that is going to go in the corner. He's another guy when you define him and you talk about blue collar players. That would be a guy like Paul Cotter. He's going to get you that greasy goal every now and again, and he's never going to shy away from going in the corner. But unfortunately, when you look at the skill set of the players, especially up front of the Vegas Golden Knights, you say, who are going to be the starting four lines? when everyone's healthy, he's the odd man out. Another guy, Chris, that if he gets healthy, and I've been saying it all year, is I can't believe his name escaped me. Number 21,
Brett Howden.
I mean, Chris, I got to tell you, I thought last year this guy had cemented himself, and he is going to do nothing but get better and better. But when healthy this year, he has not impressed me that much. And I think when he gets healthy, if these guys are clicking, and now adding Tomas Hertl to the mix in the postseason, I think he's another odd man out as well.
Yeah, I think maybe you might be right. Look, the reality is most teams don't go through the postseason with the health the Golden Knights did last year. So it's good to have this crew that you have of players who are all seasoned, all would be potentially, look, you're talking about the possibility of Brett Howden being scratched in the playoffs.
Yeah.
How'd you like to have that guy being able to come off the bench?
Same thing with Ben Hutton. What a great commodity to have him when he's healthy as a defensive healthy scratch, to just have that guy with you.
Yeah, right now Ben Hutton is your eighth D man, and Ben Hutton's playing on probably 26 teams in the NHL.
Second defensive line.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean he's probably playing for 90% of the teams in the league. Night in, night out, if he's healthy.
Were you okay with Miramanov?
Yeah.
I was too.
Yeah.
I was too.
You gave up Miramanov and draft picks to get a potential all-star caliber D-man.
Yeah, you need it desperately.
Noah Hanifin is a first-pairing D-man. He's a first-pairing D-man on any team in the NHL.
See how tall he was yesterday?
He's a taller guy, yeah.
Yeah, I did not realize how tall he was till we stood in the locker room after him. Like, whoa, man, this guy's a big dude.
I'll go full-blown Patriot here and say it's nice to have another American player on the team.
Yeah, hey, you know what? I cannot argue with you at all on that. You know, the thing is this team did, once again, they improved themselves at the trading deadline, something they are famous for doing. And again, I've told you many times, I no longer will ever question Kelly McCrimmon or George McPhee. In my head, I might. I'm not going to do it aloud unless I think it's terrible. But they have done just a really good job finding the right pieces. I knew they weren't going to get a goaltender, even though I had it on my wish list. I just knew it wasn't going to happen. They are going to figure that sooner or later, Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson will play their best. You got a guy like Yuri Patera down in Henderson, kind of an unfair shake for him this year. A lot of people saying, oh, he's not that good. The team in front of him, it's not that the Henderson Silver Knights are bad. It's that they've been cherry-picked so often this year by the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, for a while, we had an entire fourth line that was all AHL players from Henderson because they got that thin. So you have to understand, Yuri Patera is an NHL goaltender, and I'm telling you, he will play in this league. Is he ready right now? Yeah, he is. But again, I think Bruce Cassidy and all of us want to see Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson get it together. And like I said, they make great saves. There's a couple saves Aiden Hill made yesterday that were absolutely world-class saves. But again, two of the goals he let in were two of the three goals were bad goals. And I'm not going to beat this horse into the Elmer Glue Factory. I'm just going to tell you that you can't let in a bad goal and use the excuses, well, I made a bunch of good saves. No, that doesn't work. You've got to make all the easy saves. You can let a goal in that might be questionable, but you can't let goals from the face-off circle.
Like last night, you think about the goals, and one goal, you had Kolesar take out White Cloud, or Kolesar take out Nick Waugh. Then the puck bounces off of White Cloud, who blocked it, and it just happened to go right to a player in Detroit. You can't really fault him for that.
No, that one I don't fault him for.
I don't fault him for either. The other two either. Because, because Moritz Seider puts a missile at the net, and it's tipped by Michael Rasmussen. So not a whole lot he could do there. If it's tipped, it's tipped. You know, he sees it and it's tipped. And then the second goal, same type of play. Moritz Seider blast one from the blue line, and it's tipped by JT Compher. And I mean, I thought Hill was fine last night. I thought he played a good game.
I thought
it's the best game he's played in a while.
Well, I won't argue with you because he played a decent game, but he faced half the shots the Red Wings faced because the Golden Knights were really putting pressure on Detroit last night, and that's something that Bruce Cassidy and everyone was happy about. They were clearing the zones well. They just played better, and they came out fairly strong, and I liked what I saw. Again, Noah Hanifin, a new Vegas Golden Knight. And after the game, talking about in the locker room about being here and how big the win were and how big getting those points were. You heard all of that as well. And this Noah Hanifin again after the game.
It's huge, yeah. I mean, I kind of had a – I'm a little familiar with the systems where they play here because we play like that in Calgary a bit. But the guys here have been awesome too. And playing with Petro has been, you know, great too. He's so easy to play with, and he's helped me out a lot just communicating out there and making my job a lot easier. So just excited to keep getting more comfortable here and building my game and helping the team win.
And I think he's going to continue to help the team. Defensively, he is as solid as a rock. And believe me, he comes in the team in literally his second game. He's on first-line defense with Alex Pietrangelo, who you heard earlier how much of Pietrangelo has helped him out. And two veterans, I think he's a tremendous addition to this team. Jonathan Marchessault, as you know, another hat trick last night. Yes, the third goal was an empty netter. And after the game, Jonathan Marchessault talking about that. You know, Jonathan's one of those guys. He's not going to put the attention on himself every chance he gets, and this is, you know, kind of Jonathan talking about that after the game.
I thought we, despite the production that we had, I thought we had a good forecheck. We recover a lot of pucks and we're able to generate and just find each other in the zone, just giving each other space. And honestly, it was a good overall game.
And a guy that played really well also last night, a guy that has stepped up and cemented himself to me as one of the top six defensemen, and that is Nicholas Hague, who Chris talked about. Chris asked yesterday, did ask Bruce Cassidy about Nicholas Hague and the little things that sometimes really end up being really big things in the big scheme of the picture.
Tonight you guys put up five goals. I think we rightfully focus on the goals, but there was a play that Nick Hague made. I think it may have been 4-3, 3-3 at the time. Scrambling in front of the net, and he did something remarkable to keep the puck out of the net. Can you just talk about how important maybe a small play like that, that's not really a small play, but how much a play like that means for the team?
You know, was that the one where – was Brisson in the middle of that too?
Yes.
Is that the one?
Because yeah.
Don't forget, that happens quick. You're looking at the monitor. Did the puck go in the net or not, or what's going on? You know, it might have been offside if you look back on it, but at the end of the day, we don't know that in real time, but good for Nick. I think he was the guy carrying the puck and didn't, you know, it didn't end up behind him, so second effort to get back. And, you know, we use the term putting out fires, right? You have to, the goaltender is your last line of defense to put out a fire, but, you know, your D are used to doing that, and they're unsung heroes a lot of times. So good for Nick. I mean, remember Theo the other night on the stuff made one of those plays around the front of the net. So you're never quitting on pucks. And listen, you need those plays to end up on the right side of scores. And they almost got it with Marshy, right? The fourth goal, the guy's right there with him. Marshy outwills him for the puck, and if their guy knocks it out of there, you're talking about them doing it. So it's what's required. Good for Nick.
And, you know, good for Nick and good for the Vegas Golden Knights. He's really stepped up, and this guy has cemented himself again as one of the top three-line defenses. And you'll see this guy, he will play the entire playoffs as long as he's healthy. I don't see this guy ever being a scratch for the VGK. And going forward this week, there's two games this week. They play Tuesday at Seattle, and then they'll play Thursday at Calgary. Two more games they need to get points in. They're now tied with the LA Kings. With 75 points, but the Kings have one game in hand, so technically they're a little bit ahead of them. They're not too far behind Edmonton, 4 points back. They're now 16 points behind Vancouver. That's starting to get insurmountable. So, you know, we'll see what happens going forward. There's some big games. Mags has his team, the New Jersey Devils, coming in next week, the week after this, and it'll be interesting to see what goes on from here on out with the Golden Knights. I think there's a good chance they'll be okay, but again, I'm going to stick with it that the goaltenders need to play better. I understand the guys got to play well in front of them, 100%. That's all understood. But when you make a run at the Stanley Cup, almost every team that has made runs in my life have had a goaltender that's played really, really well. Because when the team does let you down in front of you, you depend on that last line of defense being there for you and making monstrous saves at big times. And we're going to need both those guys to step up a little bit. Listen, real quickly, I just wanted to mention Big League Weekend at the Las Vegas ballpark. I had a chance to go on both Friday night and Saturday afternoon. Yesterday, a long day, man. Went to the game, went home, took a quick nap, and then ran to the Golden Knights game. But I'll tell you what, the ballpark is as beautiful as can be if you get a chance to get out there and check it out. Spencer, that was a good time yesterday.
Excuse me. Sorry. No, it's fantastic. And I actually walked around. It had been a while since I had. And it's the best minor league ballpark in the country, and I would guess like the world. I don't know what kind of like the equivalent to the minor league stadium is, you know, in other places in the world, but it's just, it's literally a miniature MLB, and it's so good that I feel confident that the Oakland A's could play there in some sort of emergency if they had to do that. And can you say that about any other minor league stadium like ever? Like, that just doesn't even seem like a question. They're usually, you know, just lower quality, not bad, but you know what I mean? It's just less funding usually for minor league teams, but you wouldn't notice when you go to the stadium. They had like a Chick-fil-A stand out there. There's food every 2 seconds when you walk. I mean, it is just amazing. And if you get there early enough, you get to sit in the outfield. I know there's a pool that obviously wasn't in use yesterday. All of these things are just very Vegas. And of course, you're sitting next to one of the like coolest malls ever that you can just walk through. And there's all these amazing stores. So it's such a fun experience. Like, if you live in Vegas and you haven't gone, that's just insane to me.
No, it is. They do such a great job there. And as you mentioned, Spencer, we saw the 51s at Cashman for a number of years before we came out here. And when you look at that stadium compared to the new stadium, the only thing I liked about Cashman maybe a little bit better was the press box. I don't know why I liked it a little bit better, but the press box is just a little, it just seems too compact for me. But other than that, I absolutely love the Las Vegas ballpark. And I'll tell you, yes, I think the A's very well over the next three seasons might play a couple of series at the Las Vegas ballpark. The biggest problem, they'd have to find a way to put at least 5,000 or 6,000 more seats to get it up to like 15,000, 16,000. But the biggest problem, when people ask me, why wouldn't they just play there? You know, they only draw 5,000 in Oakland. Here's the thing. If somehow this team was able to make a run and make the playoffs, there is no way the Las Vegas ballpark could accommodate the media or the fans for postseason, because you're going to get opposing teams fans coming here in droves. Trust me on that when it happens. That's who's going to fill the stadium when the A's do get here. It's going to be the visiting teams. And if they get good, you know, yeah, Vegas people will come. Oakland people may come back down and see them. But the bottom line is, you can't accommodate a postseason at the Las Vegas ballpark. And that is the problem. You can't run the risk of saying, let's play there, they're not good enough to get in the postseason. Hey, back when Billy Beane was getting him in with Moneyball, if you would have been stuck at the Las Vegas ballpark, yes, a beautiful facility, but what are they going to do? They'd almost have to set out like giant bleachers outside the stadium where people walked up them so they could see more of the ballpark. You just can't do it, and that's the reason that. But Las Vegas Aviator season starts up soon. We'll probably have Jimmy Gemma on next week to talk about that and how you can go out and still get season tickets and attend these games. They're great. They've got so many special nights there. It's an awesome time. Let's move on. I've been waiting to talk about UNLV for a bit, and we've got Kevin Kruger is going to join the show in a second. Before we have Kevin join, though, I did get a chance after the San Diego State game, huge win, a team that has owned UNLV, and not just UNLV, San Diego State has owned the Mountain West Conference pretty much for the past decade or so. Steve Fisher and now Brian Dutch, who runs the same style of defense. They run a suffocating defense. They've always got an NBA player or two on their team, and they've got a guy like Ladie who could probably play tight end on half the NFL teams, and he is just a big, big guy. It's always a tall order, and UNLV took him down. And after the game, I got a chance to talk with Deaden Domus Jr., the 18-year-old true freshman point guard for the Rebels, along with probably the vocal leader of this team, and another guy that could put the ball in the basket, good defense, and solid on the boards, Kalen Boone. This was talking to them after the Rebels-San Diego State game.
So talking to Kalen Boone and Deaden Domus Jr., man, is that the biggest win that UNLV got at this point?
We had a couple of big wins, but it means a lot at the end of the day.
They have a great resume. They have a great coach over there. And it's great to see us pulling out on them, especially by the way they did us at their crib. We felt like we owed them. And then they're still a great team. They compete hard. They compete to the end of the clock. We found a way, and it worked out in our favor.
I've seen almost every home game. That knockdown defense in the first half was unbelievable. What did you guys talk about to come out and D up on them like that? You got a guy like D who's a monster, and you guys just put them in check for most of the first half.
Big shout out to Rob Whaley. He did a great job on him tonight, slowing him down, being very physical and hitting him. So it's a big shout out to him and Caleb.
The second half, obviously they make a couple runs, but you guys never went behind in the game. When they tied the game, what did you guys say? Because, hey, here we go again. This could have been one of those collapses.
Just stay poised. Stay poised. Keep finding ways. And at the end of the day, turnovers was the only thing that was hurting us initially in the first half. So we found a way to always get the ball up on the rim. And it works out from there. At the end of the day, we're a great team whenever we're not turning the ball over and giving up our possessions. Whenever we use our possessions, it works out in our favor.
Two guys at the opposite ends of the spectrum, fifth-year senior, transfer from Oklahoma State. You got to play when you didn't think so against Creighton. You finally get in, and the rest is history. And you got a guy, kid, that should be a senior in place.
Exactly.
That's one of the points for you guys. Guys at opposite ends, what makes this team click?
Off the court.
Literally.
Off the court, always together, always laughing, doing stuff together, whether it's playing video games or just talking in each other's rooms, hanging out. I mean, it just all started there.
Such a connected team. At the end of the day, we just want to be around each other. Even on our off days, we still find a way to get amongst each other, and we just utilize that time together. And that's what makes us so connected on the court. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what's gotten us over the hump in these last couple of games, these stretches.
For you, playing with your brother again, transferring to another school, and maybe an opportunity to get back to the dance band, and I know how much that means to you. You've talked about it. Talk about that, playing with your brother, and this opportunity now that it's right in front of you.
It's huge. At the end of the day, Caleb had his, one of his best years last year, and I had one of my better years last year, so we just wanted to meet up again and put those together. We have a great point guard with a great team. At the end of the day, we have Lou. He's giving us everything. Rob, he's giving us everything. We have a connected bench. And everybody's just trying to take the next step. And we're just trying to make it to the next level all together. At the end of the day, like, if I could play another year with my guys, I would, because I love this college year with my guys. But at the end of the day, we're just connected, and I love this group.
Two more questions. We're going to go back to you. Playing in front of home fans, the place where you were raised, you went to high school. How big is something like this, and this team to have this kind of success with you being a true freshman?
It's more than I could imagine. It's great. It's a great feeling here. Having all these fans packing the arena tonight, it was great. It was a great atmosphere. So I'm glad everyone came out tonight, especially my dad and my family all there supporting me. So this is a great feeling.
Finally, guys, you got Reno this coming Saturday, okay? They came in here a game that you probably feel slighted on. How big is the revenge factor? Is there really something to that, or is it just, okay, I want to hear about
that. We definitely owe them.
I'm not going to talk too much about them, but we understand we all been won. They're going to do what they got to do to play with us and make it a game, but we got to be us. And I personally feel that we got one coming towards them.
Last thing, the conference champion tournament is coming right around the corner. You guys, if you win on Saturday, you got a chance to be the 2 seed. How much would that mean to you right now? With UNLV kind of a lesson, like at the beginning of the season, no one gave you guys a shot, me included. So how much does this mean to you to maybe finish with the 2nd seed in the Mountain West Conference?
It's a key fight. You can't determine anything early. We understand there's highs and lows, so there's up and downs, especially me being a fifth-year guy on the scene, the highest highs and the lowest lows. So you just got to keep competing. And if you keep competing, it'll always work itself out. And with a team like that we have, it will work itself out, literally.
Guys, I appreciate you. Good luck to you the rest of the way.
Keelan Boone and Deedon Thomas Jr., two class acts, and I'll tell you what, opposite ends of the spectrum. One's a fifth-year senior. One is less than a true freshman, being that he could be a senior in high school now. And I think the upside, especially you look at Deedon Thomas Jr., this kid, you can just see the skills. And Kevin talks about it all the time. The kid grows every game. And watching UNLV, you do see him just getting better and better and taking more and more responsibility on. And it's just gigantic. Bringing Kevin Kruger in now Spence, we got him on? Oh, there he is. I couldn't see him. Spencer didn't have you up. Kevin, I really appreciate you taking the time out to join. I know you got in late from Reno. I know it was a tough one, but I'll tell you what, as slow of a start as you guys got off to yesterday, you found a way to claw back in the second half, and you went on the big run. You poked the nose in front for a second, and then Reno went on a run of their own. Talk about the ebb and flow of that game and how you use a game like that, knowing that's the last game you've got to use before you head into the Mountain West Conference Tournament.
Yeah, I think the difference in the game ended up being the opening. And when you go on a road and play in a tough environment, you just can't get off to a slow start. And we just gave them too big of a cushion, and we fought back like crazy to make it a game. But as you said, you know, there's peaks and valleys in every game. But when you're spending 20 minutes trying to catch up, it just makes it that much tougher. And we were on the exact other side of that coin. The game before against San Diego State. So But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of things to be proud of with the guys. You know, we came out, didn't come out and start the way we wanted to, but they fought like crazy, took the lead. Reno just went on another run, and we just weren't able to quite get back to it once they went on that little run. But a lot of good things.
Well, you look at the way this season started, and you know, I say straight up, watching that first game against Southern, I was a naysayer. I'm like, whoa, man, what did I just see here? You were thinking the same thing, but you knew something we didn't know. You knew you had these guys, the Boone brothers, that you got went to the portal that were going to show us all something, and boy, did they ever. And also, again, Deedon Thomas, a true freshman, his first game, which should have been the first game of his senior in high school. So I think you also knew the upside of this kid and why you recruited him so hard to get him to become a running rebel. And then we saw the upside as this team changed and morphed, especially the Creighton game when all of us got introduced to Keelan Boone and said, wow, we've got a pretty good player here. And one of the guys too, Kevin, that I've been speaking a lot about lately, Rob Whaley. I mean, that's got to be the most improved player on your team from the beginning of the season to now. That guy has morphed into a true force in the middle that has to be doubled down low, or he's just going to muscle you to the basket.
Yeah, I mean, neither of the Boone played in the Southern game. That was actually DJ's first game as well. He didn't play in either of the scrimmages, of the closed door scrimmages. So, you know, there was a lot of still learning each other early on. You know, things that everybody doesn't see in terms of got, like I just said, you know, neither one of the Boones playing there, DJ not practicing or playing in the closed door scrimmages. So, you know, that first month or so, those first few weeks were still kind of learning each other a little bit. It's an opportunity to get more practices and games under our belt. But yeah, I mean, like you said, when Keelan became eligible, the emergence of Rob, DJ's growth throughout the year, it really, you know, about conference time or just even before Christmas, we really hit our stride and started to feel pretty good. And of course, losing Jalen Hill was a huge speed bump for us. You know, he was kind of our leader, our most experienced guy. He had the most responsibility probably throughout his career in terms of being an everyday guy, and guys just kind of figured it out. And every night wasn't perfect, but you know, the guys went and battled and really played a lot of really good basketball during the conference season.
Yeah, they did, and you saw this team grow. And another guy that can't help talk about and deserves to be talked about, Luis Rodriguez. I mean, this guy has just played lights out for you. He has been a staple. He is kind of the backbone of UNLV. Another guy that's a longtime player, a senior at UNLV right now, and you know, again, part of the glue of this team going forward. Kevin, you know, I know a little bit disappointing. You know, it's so tough. And again, I was really hoping you win, because I'm like, man, the poor guy's got to get no sleep and then come and talk about it after a loss like that. But again, you beat San Diego State Tuesday night. There is a lot of things to build on this team. What is the message to these guys going forward? Now, obviously, short memory, put the Reno game behind you, but there is still a lot to play for. There's still an NCAA tournament bid. And I said it earlier, Kevin, and I'll stick with it, that this team has a great deal of talent. Talented enough where if they put it together at the right time, they could make a run at the Mountain West Conference tournament. I haven't said that in over a decade. I believe that. I know it's going to be tough. And I'll tell you what, you start right off with the toughest challenge of all. San Diego State, you beat them. Then they go and lose at Boise. You want to talk about a team coming in really salty. That is going to be the San Diego State, a team that played in the national championship game last year. What do you tell the guys and how do you get them ready? Not that they're not already motivated, but it's going to take a little bit something special to find a way to beat San Diego State twice, Kevin, inside of a 10-day period of time.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the Mountain West, you're probably looking at, I mean, you're looking at the majority of the conference where every game they're going to play in the first round is it could have been a championship game matchup. And, you know, of course, all the, you know, the media publications are saying, you know, when you talk about New Mexico, Colorado State, that they're in the NCAA tournament. And so really, I mean, that second day, you're looking at four games probably that, you know, could easily be the Mountain West Conference championship game. And I don't think anybody would, you know, call you crazy, and you wouldn't even say they were an upset to get there. So that's just kind of the mentality I think everyone's got to have. That if you start looking at the second game or the third game or doing anything other than preparing for the first one, it's going to cause problems for you and us especially. You know, like you said, we got the biggest challenge of all. We've got the most comfortable tournament team in our conference in San Diego State that's won it what feels like more times than they haven't. So you know, if we've got to be as ready as we can possibly be for that matchup against them, and then you know, do what we can, and then worry about the rest after that.
Yeah, there's no question you can't look at. I'm as excited. There's five conference tournaments in town. I am more excited about the Mountain West Conference than any of them. I think there is parity in this conference, and I think we are about to see a really good quality of basketball this coming week at the Thomas and Mack Center. Everyone is looking forward to that. Kevin, again, not looking forward, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask it. This team is a team that looks like they have a very good shot at playing in a postseason tournament. 19 wins right now. I know 20 is kind of a magic number, but if things went awry, what do you think this team would say as far as your resume goes, talking to, say, the NIT to say, hey, we deserve to be in that tournament regardless of what happens on Thursday?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. You know, I think anybody who's watched us over the last 2 months would say that this is an NCAA tournament level team. And we just, you know, with too many speed bumps and adversity in the non-conference kind of was just probably too much to put us in the field as of today. Nobody's arguing that in the NCAA tournament field, but this is certainly a team that deserves to play in the postseason. When you look at the resume since we kind of got our group, it's pretty good. I believe we're at 6 quad one wins. We've got more than a lot of the NCAA tournament at large teams are gonna have. So there's a lot of really good wins under our belt, really good basketball, and I think this is a team that when you watch them, it's a team that you think is a pretty good team, and we've got a lot of really good nights and a really good wins on our resume. But we'd love to play in whatever postseason. But our only objective and our only thought right now, San Diego State Thursday.
Finally, you don't have to play in the play-in game, which is nice. It gives you an extra day of practice, an extra day of preparation. In your opinion, Kevin, for this team, this UNLV team, to make a run, at, you know, again, you're looking at game one, I understand, but to make a run, what is it going to take, in your opinion, for this team to make a run in the Mountain West Conference tournament?
We're going to have to guard like we've been guarding. Last night really wasn't the way we've been guarding people. They shot over 50% from the field, and we've been doing a much better job dictating what we wanted possessions to be like on the defensive side. And that's really what was getting us going, just kind of that confidence and security that we could guard people and rebound it. And last night against Reno was in the last 12 games just wasn't that way. And so that's just what we've got to do. I mean, that's our DNA. That's is guarding people, rebounding it, and offensively just getting good shots with and taking care of the ball. But we've really made our identity in the last in the conference season has really just been guarding people. And if we're giving up 50% from the field, we're gonna be in trouble.
Yeah, I think the offensive glass and obviously hitting your free throws is a big thing as well. You see the little graphic of the guy wearing number 2 in the corner here on the screen. Maybe we can dress him up again and get him out there if you guys need a little extra depth, right?
Yeah, right. We'd rather play the guys we have, that's for sure.
Hey, he was pretty good in his day. We really appreciate, once again, Kevin Kruger, head coach of the UNLV Running Rebels. This Thursday, 2:30 p.m., they will be at the Thomas and Mack playing San Diego State. That might be one of the best matchups of the whole tournament. I know it's an afternoon game. The Mack, finally, a lot of people, Kevin. I love what I'm seeing. When I'm seeing a quarter of the upper deck filled again, it's been a long time since I've gone to consecutive games and seen the Thomas and Mack. How much does that mean to you to have the building filled like that and get a lot of play, you know, obviously a lot of fans in there?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. It just shows that, you know, people are coming back, you know, and it's a great step for the program. It's a great step for the guys to see. It's a great step for the local high school kids and the middle school kids to see people getting back out and supporting UNLV and, you know, having, you know, an exciting Vegas kid obviously doesn't hurt it, but, it's just good to see. It was really good to see, especially on senior night, that people had come back out. They like this group. They appreciate the way they play. They like the way that the university is being represented by how they're playing on the court. And I think it's just another step forward for this program in again, getting back into the NCAA tournament conversation every year.
He is Kevin Kruger, head coach of the Runaround. Kevin, we're going to let you get going. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. And best of luck to you this week in the tournament. We'll be out there. And, I can say go Rebs because I told Andy Grossman I was going to say nothing. I've got nothing negative to say right now. I think that this team is primed and ready for this. And maybe that loss to Reno, you can use that as fuel to the fire, man. Best of luck to you this week.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. Once again, Kevin Kruger, we appreciate him taking time to join the show this morning. And I'm telling you, it is a different quality of basketball with this UNLV team that we've seen in a while. And again, I'm not saying that because I'm trying to kiss anyone's ass here. I 100% believe this team has the talent to compete in the Mountain West Conference Tournament and go a long way. They're going to have to put it together. They're going to have to play well. They're going to have to play well at both ends of the floor. And, you know, bottom line is you got to hit your free throws and you've got to defend on the perimeter, things that they've had a little bit of trouble with at times. But, again, we'll see. I think this team is geared to do all that. Spence, go right into fact this for me.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Fact this brought to you by Lifelike Hair Center of Las Vegas. If you are experiencing hair loss or thinning hair and want to learn about the best non-surgical options available, call 702-737-5759 or go to lifelikehair.com and schedule your free consultation today. Fact. This week in Las Vegas, 5 automatic bids to the NCAA men's basketball tournament will be earned, and several other teams playing here this week will get at-large bids. This has become an annual staple and something all sports fans in Las Vegas look forward to, as do all members of the sports media. However, as interest has grown, one of the conferences decided that several members of the local media that have been covering these tournaments since their inception, mind you, are no longer significant to them and therefore are no longer welcome to attend. My guess is that if the Las Vegas media isn't important, neither are the Las Vegas residents. Because not mentioning any names, but if the West Coast Conference doesn't want us at the games, there is no reason for us to talk about them. Funny, because I had a nice conversation with former Gonzaga star Drew Timmy last year after the West Regional Final. That was just last year. But not to worry, no one from the West Coast Conference is getting past the Sweet 16 this year. Take that to your betting app, okay? Or to the window. I'm going to leave it right there. Obviously, there's a little bit of bitterness, but it just surprises me that conferences get pompous. The local media in Vegas talks about you, pumps you up, helps get people to buy tickets to the conference tournament. Hope your fans can fill the stadiums, because maybe Vegas fans, if you're not that interested, don't need to show up. I thought that was a bunch of crap, and I've noticed a bunch of members of media talking about a couple of conferences where they're not getting credentialed. Shocking. This is the local media. It's the sports mecca of the Western United States right now. Look what's been going on here. In the past year alone, a Super Bowl, the Stanley Cup Final, okay, the NCAA Final Four. Not the Final Four, but how about a regional final? This is what's going on in Vegas. It's soon going to host a Final Four. We'll host more Super Bowls. About to now have a Major League Baseball team here. But let's keep the local media out of a conference tournament where the conference champion's not even going to get past the Sweet 16. Good luck to you. Anyways, we're a little bit short on time. I do want to mention last week the NASCAR race real quick. Had a great time at the race. Again, thanks to Jeff Motley, who does such a great job out there organizing all of this. And the race is tremendous in Las Vegas. Spencer and I were out there last week with Brian Shapiro. Had a really good time. Kyle Larson took all 3 stages. If there's any complaint I have about NASCAR, nothing to do with the facility, nothing to do with the cars, it's only that I don't like the stages. In my opinion, it's like the protection they're doing in the NFL for quarterbacks. These drivers know they've got to drive 400 miles. Why are we giving them breaks, like 3 breaks? They get breaks under every caution, and they get breaks when they pit. They should not get breaks twice in the middle of a race to slow down, think, catch your collective breath. No, that takes away from the race. There's one winner, not three in each race. I don't like the point systems per race. At the end of the season, it's a point system to determine who gets in the playoffs and who wins the championship. But why the hell are they doing it in races, this stages? It is such a turnoff that all of a sudden they slow down. Oh, he won. And, you know, hey, Kyle Larson swept it. He deserved it. That way he outright won. But if somebody doesn't sweep it, like, can you imagine somebody winning the first two stages handily? The third stage doesn't even matter. They have to, like, their car would have to blow up for them not to win the race. I don't like it. I think it needs to change. On the final note, Spencer, I'll bring you in here talking about the NFL. You know, again, free agency starts tomorrow at noon Eastern time, 9 a.m. Pacific. Kansas City Chiefs avoided Chris Jones going to free agency. Five-year deal that includes $95 million guaranteed. This deal makes him the highest-paid defensive tackle in NFL history. That bodes well for a couple of other defensive tackles. The Raiders, I know, are in the market for one. Man, if I'm Mark Davis, I quit talking to Russell Wilson, which we'll talk about in a second. Why aren't you talking to somebody like Christian Wilkinson? This guy is a beast. He had 9 sacks last year, which was third on the Dolphins. And, you know, after the Chris Jones deal, Wilkinson's going to be looking to cash in big. He should. He's really good. And the Raiders desperately need a help at the defensive tackle position. Another guy I would look at, Spencer, is a guy like Leonard Williams from the Seattle Seahawks. He had a great season, his best of his career last year, but Seattle is doing everything in their power, and my guess is they're going to find a way to re-sign him. So the big name out there is Christian Wilkinson. Do the Raiders got a shot at getting this guy, Spencer?
I think they absolutely do. Take a look at their cap space. I think it's at $50 million. The cap space is kind of complicated, so I'm not going to act like I know all the ins and outs of it, but I know right now they have 50, and I know Jimmy G's drug tests, when they release him, they're actually not on the hook for a lot of that money because he failed that drug test. And then you also have guys like Hunter Renfrow who could be gone. They just released Tillery too as well. So they're freeing up a lot of space, and they are, like, I believe in the top 5 in terms of cap space. And, you know, the Chris Jones deal set the market in a way. I mean, he's definitely like number one, essentially, other than like Aaron Donald. So he's not going to demand that much, but he's obviously going to want a lot of money. And I think that bodes well for the Raiders. Normally, you don't want to spend too much money. You want to have the most cost-effective deals. But considering that he may have just like cornered himself out of the market because Chris Jones deal is so like big, I think that's good for the Raiders. Because if you get him on the defensive line, I mean, that's just the biggest weakness of the Raiders. And it has been, I feel like, my whole life. Like, I think every single year, like, the one of the number one needs is defensive tackles. They've had some great defensive ends in my lifetime. Richard Seymour, even though it was at the end of his career, he was great for the Raiders. He was one of my favorite players growing up. And it's just been so long since they've had a guy in the middle. I mean, maybe since like their heyday. I'm talking like even thinking back to like Warren Sapp. That's probably the last guy that I can remember. And having him, he would look great in a Raiders uniform. And talk about just how monstrous that would be. I mean, you have Max Crosby and then this guy in the middle. I don't know what defenses would do. Patrick Graham, man, has done wonders for this defense. And I was like critical of him. I was calling for his job at one point. But it takes time, obviously, to gel. And it looked like they were at the end of the season with kind of less talented guys. So if you can actually add top-tier talent, this is a pretty scary Raiders defense. The offensive side, I don't know about yet. But you get a guy to his caliber, that would be amazing. And I'll just quickly say before I bounce back over to you, is that I'd love a guy like DJ Reader, even a guy from the Bengals. I mean, just it really anybody to kind of mix things up because they have nobody right now.
No, you're 100% right, Spencer. I know they will address that, if not in free agency, definitely in the upcoming draft. But you talked about Jimmy G, the failed drug test, and yeah, he'll be released and it'll free up some cap space. Russell Wilson just had a career low in passing yards, Spencer, and they are talking to him seriously. There is a very good chance. I know he talked to the Steelers and the Giants last week, but it sounds like he's going to end up a Raider. I don't know what they're thinking, man. I like Russell Wilson. He's had a great career. I think his best year, well, not think, his best years are behind him for sure. Listen, we're out of time. This has been out of line. I want to definitely thank Coach Kevin Kruger for taking time out this morning. And, of course, last Tuesday for Dean Thomas Jr. and Keelan Boone talking to me. Always Spencer Magnum. I wouldn't know what to do without him. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. We're here every Sunday, same time, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. We will be back next week, same time, same place. March Madness, baby! March Madness. We'll talk more about that next week. Bye-bye.